Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, today I am talking revival, remembrance, and replacement. So stick with me. Well, now you've got to love the Mint Theater. And I, along with many others who report on the stage scene, certainly do. Now, this is a company run by Jonathan Bank that finds old chestnuts and tries to make them new again. Well, that's not entirely accurate. They don't modernize or update them in any way, but the point is to give forgotten, ignored, even unsuccessful plays another hearing. The one just opening at the company's Theater Row locale, the Beckett Theater, is a proven example. The show is called Days to Come, and the draw here is the author, Lillian Hellman. The Mint usually finds plays from across the Atlantic, like its last production, Conflict, which was about two sparring political Brits. It felt like it could be taking place today. But this time it's an American piece by a treasured, if controversial, writer. Now, I spoke with Bank during intermission, and I asked him if he was concerned that Days to Come, that its original Broadway debut in 1936 lasted just 1 week, with no more days to come. It was not treated kindly by the critics, and William Randolph Hearst famously walked out smack in the middle of it. That was likely due to the fact that the play deals with a strike, and, well, Titan Hearst had little sympathy. All that intrigued more than disturbed the Mint Theater. The truth is, Days to Come is not a particularly good play, but it's always fascinating to listen to a writer's voice at the early stages of her career. You can't help leave this one without being impressed that Hellman picked up her pen, in those days I think it was, and go on to write 10 other plays, including The Little Foxes, Toys in the Attic, and Watch on the Rhine. Days to Come was not Hellman's first play, by the way. That was The Children's Hour, which dared to deal with the subject of lesbianism. It was successful and later became a movie. Hellman was allowed to adapt her play, but the gay thing had to come way down. The writer's personal life, frankly, was more interesting than much of her work, her involvement with left-wing, even communist politics, and her 30-year relationship with Dashiell Hammett. They never married. That was dramatized in the film Julia, starring Jane Fonda and Jason Robards. Do I digress? Well, that tends to happen when discussing Lillian Hellman. This current production, a bit too sluggishly directed by J.R. Sullivan, is an 11-character piece that has its share of lefty leanings and messages. It deals with a hairbrush factory. We make the best brushes in America, is the proud boast. Takes place in Cleveland in the Depression-era 30s. The characters are not always brought to life, and the interactions are frequently awkward. I'm sure the acting could be better, but I do think most of the problem is in the writing. A few too many ideas, not quite integrated enough. But Hellman could certainly write. Some of my favorite lines include, "In the business world, there is no reward for virginity. I'm working for a man who doesn't want me to work for him." You can see Hellman's union versus corporate politics already rising to the surface. She was also onto a contemporary issue that resonates today. "The guns sound different when they're not for fun," says one character. "Before I leave here, they're going to have to put them away." Hellman's feminist mind was clearly percolating long before that became Me Too-ish. "You're a fine lady," says one character, "and I'm frightened of fine ladies. They usually land men in cemeteries. My mother wanted me to be rich enough to hate where I came from. Well, I hated her instead." The history of the show, by the way, did not begin with that disastrous review and end here. In 1978, there was a revival off-Broadway, and that time the reviews were more positive. In one of her own writings years later, Helma defended Days to Come, writing, "It's a good report of rich liberals in the 1930s, of a labor leader who saw through them, of a modern lost lady, and has in it a correct prediction of how conservative the American labor movement was to become." Well, her defense reads a little better than this one plays, but if you want to hear a playwright revving up both in her art and her politics, Days to Come may intrigue you. Now on to another subject. I think I've only spoken here two other times about notable deaths in the theater world. those being Mike Nichols and Edward Albee. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Neil Simon passing away this week at the age of 91. Simon would probably have an apt wisecrack about not even getting top billing on his death. That would, of course, be John McCain, whose life and death are pretty much covering our news cycles. No, Neil Simon did not serve his country that way, but he surely supplied a million laughs when we needed it. From Barefoot in the Park to The Odd Couple to his autobiographical trilogy, including Biloxi Blues and Brighton Beach Memoirs, Simon did it all, from TV's golden comedy years to movies, but mostly he was a man of the theater, which is why there is one on Broadway that carries his name. Rest in humor, Neil Simon. And finally, the most interesting and I think potentially exciting theater announcement of the week is that Laura Benante will be taking over the role of Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. That starts in October. Lauren Ambrose will be moving on to a television project. And this is one of the rare times when the replacement will most likely be better than the original. Ambrose, a fine actress, surprised many people in that she could sing nicely. But she ultimately was a disappointing Eliza for many, myself included. A heaviness kind of set over this production. My hopeful predictions for the role originally were either for Annalee Ashford or, yes, Laura Benante to be Eliza. They can sing, they are loverly to look at, and they have great humor. This casting coup is going to truly help the production, which was starting to put up reduced ticket prices, due, I think, to less than rapturous word of mouth and the lack of any Tony Awards. Laura Benante will bring exactly what is needed at Lincoln Center, and I would think there would be a lot of people, myself included, who will actually return to see it again. Well, the only time I can think of when a star was replaced by a better fit was when Bernadette Peters, a huge talent but miscast as Annie Oakley, was replaced by Reba McEntire in Annie Get Your Gun. I'm sure there may be others, Jill, but none come immediately to my mind.
Well, and let's not forget, my sidebar of cultural appropriations, like they're actors, but forgetting that for a second. No, mm-hmm. You gave your ideal Eliza Doolittle sometime back, and she was, I can attest that she was definitely on that list. I have a semi, you might not even know the answer, but who makes that decision? Like, who sits down and goes, okay, great, we need to liven things up a bit?
I'm sure the producer, maybe the director, is a big director there, Bartlett Shear, I think. And he's a big part. But I think with Lincoln Center, that's a pretty prestigious company. And things were faltering, there's no doubt. And I'm not saying I don't believe Lauren Ambrose had another something to go off to. I don't think they're making that up. But it needed something. I don't know. Wouldn't it be nice to have been in that room where it happened? Whether there's more going on here, maybe, you know. But something needed to change. It was definitely faltering. And they didn't expect that with My Fair Lady. I think they expected one of those two-year runs like they had with South Pacific, all the Kelly O'Hara shows. That was the other actress people thought would be the perfect Eliza, Kelly O'Hara. But I didn't think that would happen. I just think Laura Benante is a perfect choice. She rarely misses in anything, and she is beautiful, and she can sing amazingly. Anyway, I don't know, but I think it's gonna possibly save that production.
And what would call it? How would people know it was saved? Like, how long would it? How long does it have to go for it to be saved?
Well, I think it'll be interesting. I bet they start reporting the ticket sales, which they do. And we could find out if there's an uplift in ticket sales. You can walk by the ticket booth and see if it's on half price. I was shocked when it went on half price, you know, at the tickets booth. And that was really after the Tony Awards when it got shut out virtually. And by the way, the winner, the one that beat it, Once on This Island, which had been faltering, and now sells out every show. And Carousel, which was the other show that opened with My Fair Lady, and that one is closing.
Right.
So you can't say you can't say Tony Awards don't have an impact. They do.
They do, and I think that you might have discovered something about why they do, because, you know, we have all of these wonderful insular universes, whether it's a political universe or Broadway or the different facets of the entertainment. You have writing. There are just and people within those universes know who they are and what they do and know what they're, and often the expression of what's going on there isn't reported on. I'm trying to be diplomatic. It's not, people on the outside don't know what's going on the inside, essentially, even though they are being told stuff. So one of the things that the Tony Awards, and, you know, kudos to CBS for keeping them on, frankly, does, and one of the reasons that people fight for that 35 seconds on the Tony Awards is because it brings it widens it out.
Totally. I mean, we forget how few people ever get to Broadway, obviously, in this country. But that does a tremendous service. And I don't know what this one, but yes, they have an impact. And, you know, to sort of to get back to where we started, most people go for a show that has great word of mouth. They go for a star, whether it's Denzel Washington or, you know, or they go for a play that gets unbelievable reviews, like a Hamilton, a once-in-a-lifetime kind of. And occasionally they go for the playwright, which is kind of how we started today. And here's one, Lillian Hellman, who's been long gone and was not that lovable a character, but was always of interest. And people are going to see this. I predict this will be one of Mint's most successful productions, simply because of her name, Lillian Hellman. People got excited about it. And it was a play that very few of us had ever heard of, even though we thought we know all of her work. So every once in a while there's a playwright. I mean, yes, of course, Eugene O'Neill or, you know, Tennessee Williams, but those are ones, you know, the same ones come back and back and back. This one, very few people knew, and there's just always intrigue for some reason with Lillian Hellman, kind of a woman ahead of her time. So now she's getting her days. Her days have come.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.